Welcome to First Post Masterclass, our brand new podcast series where elite athletes break down their craft for you. My name is Amit Kamath and joining me in this episode is Fawad Mirza. Fawad is currently India's foremost equestrian rider, having won 2 silver medals at the 2018 Asian Games. He's also the first Indian rider to qualify for the Olympics in 2 decades. Today, he'll talk to First Post about the nuances of his discipline, like how riders forge a bond with their horses and just how expensive the sport can be. Okay, Fawad, you are currently in Gander Kese. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
I guess I can't say it so well, but yeah.
Right, so you are in Gander Kese with your 4 horses.
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about what the past few months have been like, lockdowns, you are in northwestern Germany of all places. Could you tell us a bit about what that's been like?
So, I think the lockdown has been quite similar to everywhere else around the world. Obviously, some regions in Germany had stricter restrictions and... fortunately for us, the restrictions weren't so heavy with regards to, standing in queues. Because the population density here is quite low, so we never had to queue up outside a supermarket or something like that. Whereas in other places, there were queues for hours long outside the supermarket and other essential need shops. That was sort of the situation for sort of our general food shopping and things like that. But with regards to training and looking after horses, everything stayed the same or as normal. Horses need everyday looking after. They need care every day, and that didn't stop at all. Our work, our training, that all kept going. Obviously, the training had to be toned down a bit due to the cancellation of many shows, which was a bit unfortunate because, you train over the winter and you really prepare the horses and you aim each horse at different shows. I've won India a quota place, but I'm still yet to achieve a qualification at a long four-star, a CCI long four-star. And all that got cancelled, so it was a bit of a shame. But, I think the pandemic has stopped the entire world in its tracks in every industry, so we can't do too much about it. But... and with regards, like I said, with the horse industry, everything remained open and so on. So our line of work continued without any hiccups or too many restrictions imposed in the equestrian industry.
Right. You mentioned that, your industry or the sport itself has been stopped dead in its track, like the rest of the world.
Yes.
I wanted to understand, with the Tokyo Olympics being pushed forward by a year, how do you kind of see that? Do you see that as a welcome change, or do you see that as a challenge for you personally?
I think I must say I was at first glance I was very disappointed. Obviously, I think many athletes or every single athlete would be. Due to the fact that, like I said, you spend a lot of time working, training, and moreover, the mental aspect of it. You think about this a lot. How are you going to be? What's your game plan? You try to reproduce, to emulate what the feeling is like, and you think about it a lot, And then suddenly you're told it's all can't. Well, it was in limbo whether they were going to cancel it or not, and then they postponed it, which ultimately was probably the best decision they could do given the circumstances. But after at a second glance at it and looking at it from in hindsight, I think it was a good decision, and particularly for, I think, not just for me, but equestrian athletes in particular, I think the added year is of no, if it's of no harm, it's most likely a benefit for many equestrian athletes, because the added year is good for the horses. It's more time to train. I'm relatively new to the level, especially this level, four-star level, you know. So for me to get another year to train at this level, to get a better relationship with the horses, particularly the new horse the embassy group has acquired for me, and also it gives another horse of mine, Senya Medicott, who sustained an injury last year, so he was out for the entire year, and I would have liked to have taken him this year to Tokyo had it been this year, but we were in doubt of whether it was too soon for him with regards to the Olympics being too soon for him, as in, you know, horses, to get to full fitness, a horse has to do a lot of work. It's a year, it's years, or it's months of foundation fitness which you have to keep building up and so on. So it's not something where you can just pull them out and say, okay, we're going to go to this show. You know, you really have to prepare them for these big events. And so coming back, I think it, for me, it's worked out in my favor, you know. I'm very happy about how it's played out. Yeah,
right. I'm glad you mentioned Senor Medicott, because I was going to ask about that. What sort of things do you as a rider have to do to, you know, have a bond with your stud or your steed?
So I think, you know, it's a partnership, and I think a partnership forms by training together and by being around each other and so on. It's amazing, and it's like how, you know, pets get attached to you, and they know when you're sad, and they know when you're upset, and they know when you're angry, and all of these various things. Animals, I think all animals have a knack at picking out these vibes, or they have this sixth sense of, you know, so they know you like them, they know that you're fond of them, and then you sort of grow together as you train, and you go to war together, so to speak, you know. Okay, we look at going not into the dressage arena like you're going into war, but let's say, for example, the cross-country test, which is a very important part of our sport, especially in my discipline, which is eventing. It's like going to war against what the course designer has put up for you to tackle. And the horse has to completely trust you. And he puts his full faith in you that you're not going to ask him questions or make him do things that might harm him or put him in danger in any way. So, and I think once you, as you train, you obviously start slowly, and as you build up, you know, they learn to trust that, okay, hey, I'm not gonna put him in any danger, and then he learns to trust me more and more, and it builds up like that, in that way. And then the sheer amount of time we spend in the stable around the horses, we feed them, we look after them, we clean them, we do everything for them. And then I think this helps a lot to build a partnership, to build a bond, to have a relationship, and so on. And sure, some horses may like me more than the others, and so on. But it's amazing how each individual has its own characteristics and its own personality, and it's amazing. It's very special, and to find out what makes them work, what makes them tick, what they like, what they don't like.
Right. I also wanted to understand a bit about pedigree horses. I read somewhere that all of your horses are European pedigree horses, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, well, one is New Zealand bred,
right.
But I don't think there is, well, let's just say they're sport horses. So, you know, primarily in India, for example, if I give India as an example, we are using ex-race horses as for equestrian sports such as show jumping, dressage, and eventing, which up to a certain level, they are very, very good. And they are very, very capable as well. But when you come to the higher levels, you need horses that are bred specifically for the sport that you want to do. For example, I wouldn't be able to ride majority of my horses in pure high-level dressage competitions, nor would I be able to do that for pure high-level show jumping competitions, you know. So the horses we have here are bred specifically for my discipline, which is eventing. And that's why, so when the whole breeding aspect of it, you know, they really go into what you need for an eventing horse. You need a horse that has, you know, a good attitude, fair ability to run fast over long distances, and you know, a strong type of breed. So you look at all these aspects, and then you pair the matings, and then you produce horses for a certain discipline, you know, or you breed horses for a certain discipline. So for example, our horses here are, like I said before, are bred specifically for this discipline, for this sport, eventing. So that's how it works. And you know, you may, for example, you may be able to get a dressage horse to do the eventing job to a certain level, but I mean, it can only do as much as it can do because it's not bred for this sport. You know what I mean? There's a completely different type of horse, different muscle formation, different shape, different size. It's like, these horses wouldn't fare so good on a racetrack. They'd be too slow.
Right.
You know? So it's like the make. It's the make, what to say it in simple ways, the make of these horses is for a specific sport.
Right. Could you also talk to us a little bit about the logistics of the sport, you know, transporting your horses from one country to another? I know for a fact that horses also require a horse passport. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so transporting horses, I mean, at least before this pandemic, it was very popular. Horses would fly every 2 weeks all over the world to compete and then fly back, and they were, it was very free, as in it was very easy.
Right.
But having said that, of course, there's a lot of logistics that went into it. Horses, as you rightly said, have passports. They have exactly how our passports are. I mean, they have an identification page, where they're born, everything. It's very similar to our passport. The only thing different they have there is they have a record of their flu vaccinations and their boosters and their tetanus shots and so on. And this is primarily to control, for disease control. For example, because these horses are traveling from different countries and going to other countries and so on, you don't want them to take a disease from this country to a country that hasn't had the disease before, and then you get a crazy outbreak and so on and so forth, you know.
Right.
So that's the primary reason for them to have this, in the passports they have this flu vaccinations page, and where they write down all the vaccinations they've had, keep a record of all the vaccinations they've had, and they have to be up to date before a horse can leave, exit a country or come into a country. So horses have their own transport. Horses are amazing animals. They you can put them on a flight, you can put them on a truck. It's really, they're very, very workmanlike, and obviously some horses travel easier than others, and some horses don't like it, but I mean, there are ways of working around that and getting them comfortable to it, traveling. it's very expensive. For example, flying horses is very expensive.
Right.
You know, obviously, they're heavy and large animals, and they need a lot of care, especially on flights and so on. But at the same time, it's at least before this pandemic happened so often, and horses would fly all over. You wouldn't believe where they went. For example, Senior Medicot flew all the way to Jakarta and so on, and he came back, and it's amazing how they do it, you know. It's
right.
And I was a bit nervous at first to load him onto the pallet that then went on into the flight, but they were very calm and didn't faze him at all.
Right. You mentioned how expensive it is to, you know, transport horses from a country to the other. I'm also trying to understand what sort of money does it take to be an equestrian rider?
Yes, I must say it's a very expensive sport, and I'm very grateful for the Embassy Group to support me and support me right through my international career. It's huge investments involved. You know, buying horses, firstly, they're expensive, and the most expensive part is looking after them. You know, they take a lot of care. It's a full-time job. You know, I don't do anything else. I don't have time to do anything else other than look after, ride, train my horses. Then you've got vet expenses. Then you've got farriery expenses. So, you know, to maintain, let's say to maintain a horse in my discipline at the level that I have, or the level that my guys are, the horses that I have here, it's really expensive. You're looking at around, let's say, including show costs, including transport, including vet, feed, farrier, bedding, all of this, you're looking at around, let's say, 4,500 euros per horse per month.
Right. Right.
And that's inclusive of everything. So let's say training and everything is into that, right?
Right.
But at the end of the day, these horses are top level sport. So, you know, their care is a little bit more intensive than a hobby horse's care would be, which could be, you could look after a hobby horse for 300 euros a month, you know?
Right.
So it just really depends on what level you're looking at and where you want to go and what you want to do, you know, ultimately in the end. But surely it's expensive even to look after a hobby horse, you know. It's a lot of money. But the thing is, it's expensive all over the world. It's not like it's cheaper in some places or something like that. Surely in India, we have the advantage of having a lot of help, having a lot of labor, you know. We're able to do that, and here I think it's primarily a lot more expensive because labor is so expensive here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For example, grooms and things like that to look after the horses, they cost a lot and so on, so hence we don't have any of that, and I do it, you know, where I can cut the cost down. I take advantage of that, and I try to find those places where I can do it myself or something like that, you know,
right,
to keep the cost at a minimal.
Right.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, you know, for a rider, just taking care of the horses is like a full-time job. And you said that you did not have the time to do pretty much anything else. So I wanted to understand, when was the last time you actually took a vacation?
Well, I don't think I even remember that.
Okay.
Probably 4 years ago, I don't know. Maybe, I very hard to, because it's funny. I eat, everything I do is horses. I mean, there's not one, you know, not one conversation I have during the day or in the last how many ever years or the last since I moved abroad to train and compete and ride, every single conversation I've had with anyone has been to do with horses. So that's how engrossed I am in this whole sport, you know. It's funny, I can't talk to people if it's not about horses, because not that I don't follow the news and I don't do this and I don't do that, but I just don't know what to say. It's like sometimes I speak to my friends from India who are not involved in the sport, you know, and the conversation only goes so far, because you're like, okay, I can't talk to you about horses, but I've asked you how you are and how everybody else is, and that's it. but if I speak to a friend of mine here who, for example, I have a very close friend who went to school with me in India. He's also Indian, and we studied together up until from first grade to the 12th grade. We both decided to take up this sport professionally. He's training in France. He's doing it on his own, by his own means, and so on. And I'm here in Germany, and we speak every day, but I can speak to him for hours and hours because we have so much to talk about: our horses, what they did, how we can help each other in ways.
Right.
But if I call again another close friend of mine from school who's been with me from the first grade to the 12th grade, and the conversation only goes so far.
Right. You know?
So,
right.
My life is totally this, and I think you have to be. I think today, in today's world, things have become or gotten so competitive that, you know, people either have so much talent or either have so much skill or are so intelligent that they train in such a good way and so on, that you got to really be a little bit, slightly insane to your game or insane to your craft, where you've got to look at it in a way that some people from the outside might think it's unhealthy.
Right.
But if you look at me, you know, I'm healthy, I'm happy, I'm fit, I'm well. But for somebody outside, they might think, oh, you're a little bit too deep into this, or it's not healthy for your mind to be so invested in this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But my personal feeling is that's how it's got to be in today's world, because look, it's so competitive in any field, right? I mean, anything you look at nowadays, it's just unbelievable how the lengths people are willing to go to achieve greatness or to achieve what they want to achieve in the end, you know. So you have to be a slightly insane to your game, is my feeling.
I also wanted to understand, is there a sort of specific diet that you have to follow as a rider?
Not necessarily for our sport, right?
Okay.
Not necessarily for this discipline of equestrian sport. For racing, of course, yes, you have to have a strict diet. Your weight has to be under a certain amount. If you're an apprenticeship jockey, I think it's something like 48 or 50 kilos, so it's very light.
Right.
And I think if you have to be on a strict diet to maintain your weight at that level. But for our sport, Not necessarily, you know. You can weigh as heavy as you like. It's obviously a disadvantage for your horse,
right,
if you're too heavy, but there's no weight restriction. But as far as dieting go, yes, I like to. I primarily focus on eating, you know, healthy and eating food that you know, keeps me healthy in my mind as well as my body. I try to stay away from junk food, but of course, I do have my cheat days and so on. I stay away from sugar. I stay far away from sugar,
mm-hmm.
Artificial sugars, but like with fruits and things, that's always okay because they have a lot of fiber in them. So yeah, my diet is nothing. It's not very strict or anything of that sort. But it's just a normal healthy diet without junk food and sugar, let's say.
Right. A couple of last questions. In equestrian sport, the perception usually is that it's the steed that's doing all the heavy lifting, you know. But as a rider, do you also have to maintain your fitness?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because you can potentially make your horse more tired if you are not fit, because you as a rider sitting on top of the horse has to be able to maintain his balance, and it's a lot of core stability, and that takes up a lot of energy. You know, if you ever tried doing a plank for longer than whatever, 5 minutes in a row or longer than that even, you know, it takes up a lot of energy, and that is pretty much riding.
Right.
You know, you have to hold your position, you have to hold your core strength and hold that stability on the horse. And the second you start moving around, you make the horse more tired or put the horse out of balance, and then you can risk the horse having an injury because he's out of balance. And for example, you know, there's a lot of people play this game in the pool, in the swimming pool, where you get on top of your friend's shoulders and you have this kind of pushing game. I don't know if there's a name or a word for it.
Right.
But I'm sure you probably tried it as well, where you've had somebody on your shoulders and you're in a pool and you're trying to push the other one who's on the next person's shoulders off, you know?
Right.
And you know how hard it is for you to maintain your balance when the guy on top of your shoulders is moving around.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take that as a horse and rider kind of relationship. So that's what the horse is going through. So if the guy on top of you is really unbalanced, you have to work really hard to maintain your balance and to stay upright. And the second the guy on top of you is balanced and is not moving around too much, it's much easier for you to move around and walk in that pool and maneuver things. So maneuver around things. So it's a little bit similar to that. So I think fitness for riders is very, very important.
Right, right. Okay, the last question, it's like a sign-off question of sorts. I wanted to understand the secrets behind the name of your horses. There's Senior Mendicott, there is Touching Wood, there's Fernhill FaceTime. Is there like a particular reason why they are named so?
Well, possibly. So these horses, they were bought with those names. So I didn't get to name them.
Right.
Maybe for some of them I would have named them a little bit different. But for example, Fernhill FaceTime, Fernhill is a prefix. And it's, you know, coming back to the breeding part of it. So Fernhill,
okay,
is a stud farm that breeds these horses for sport, for our sport particularly. So you have Fernhill Nighttime, you have Fernhill by Night. You have all these different names, Fernhill by Night, Fernhill Adventure. So these are all different horses that have come from this particular stud farm. Does
right.
that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And Senior Mendicott. Mendicott is a big company here that makes cotton or medical grade cotton for the use in hospitals and so on. And they used to own Senior Mendicott before. So hence he got the name Senior Mendicott, and he had horses all with this Mendicott at the end. So he had Mrs. Mendicott, he had Mr. Mendicott, and he had all these various other horses who had this Mendicott at the back of their name. So Senior Mendicott is got the name in that sense. Touching Wood, I suppose he was named after a very famous racehorse. There was a very famous racehorse in England that won the St. Ledger and did a lot of cool things on the racetrack. So I'm sure. So this racehorse was also Irish. So maybe they got the name from that or named him after this famous racehorse. And Dayara. I tried to find out what Dayara means in German, but I think it's like a norm. It means it's just a normal name here, like Paulina or Paul or whatever. You know, it's just a normal German name,
right?
Without a meaning as such. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time, Fawad.
No, thank you very much, Amit, and I hope you're staying safe and keeping out of the coronavirus's way.
Yeah, I am. So that was Fawad Mirza with his insights on the incredible sport of equestrian riding. We hope you enjoyed listening to it. Don't forget to tune in to the next edition of First Post Masterclass. Until then, stay safe and goodbye.